six seasons, the Dogs are the champions.
This is Gary O'Neill to win it.
They've got it. Terrific header. Callum Robinson. Super ball in.
Great feeling. We have to treasure these nights.
We do indeed. Hello from Damien O'Mara. You're very welcome to the RTE Soccer Podcast. Like one of those questionable utility players, I am here again filling in for the solid rock that is Adrian Eames. But to guide me through the action, joined as always by James O'Toole. How are you, James?
How you doing, Damien? How are you?
To bring the bit of creativity to us, Conan Byrne is with us. How are you, Conan?
Hey, Damien. How's things?
Not too bad at all. Thanks for being with us. And then the legend up top, Liam Coyle. How are you, Liam?
How's it going, Damien? You all right?
We can hear the Brandywell in the background. We're chatting in the immediate aftermath of Shamrock Rovers win away to Derry City. Liam, just the body language of some of the Derry players as they walked off, are they left to reflect upon a game that they should have got something else out of rather than a 2-1 defeat?
Probably, Damien. When you go that late in the game and you're defending, you know, for your lives, like, you know, for to be fair, they were Shamrock Rovers, they were the better side, you know, football wise, but they worked so hard, and then they conceded that first goal, and you could see the shoulders drop then, and after that, Rovers, they smelt that they were going to get the 3 points out of it, and it's disappointing for the Derry players, but that they pick themselves up now and go again on Saturday against Shelburne.
James, your take on it?
Very dogged display, but Derry obviously didn't have much of the ball, but as soon as that goal went in, unfortunately the OG off Horgan's nose, you could see it was only going to go one way. Shamrock Rovers got their guts into the game and started passing the ball away, put a lot of pressure on Derry. Maybe, I think, and just maybe, Liam might back me up with this, I think Derry might have made a couple of substitutions before the first goal even went in. Young Jack Malone looked absolutely out on his feet and could well have been taken off before the first goal even went in.
It's a fair observation, Liam.
Yeah, James, you're not going to believe us. I just said exactly the same thing on commentary with Eric up here. I thought there was one play down the left. I think it was Ferrugia just get in front of Jack before that. And you could see he was out on his feet. And I thought at that stage he should have. And then a couple of minutes later, Ferrugia has a run at him. They get the corner and they get the goal out of it. So I think there could have been a couple of changes made. So to be fair, you got to give Stephen Bradley great credit for the way, you know, he didn't muck about. He knew his team needed a few changes, and he emptied his bench, and you know, by the end of it, you know, they were playing a different, it wasn't his strongest team was on the field, but you know, he knew that if they had to get the first goal, then his team would have went on. And at that stage, the Derry players were flat out in their feet because they worked so hard as to try and stay in the game.
Yeah, just to point out to people who haven't heard the result or haven't heard the scorers, who I presume you have at this stage, Walter Ferreira with the opener in 36 minutes, Horgan with the own goal in 78, and then Lopez with the winner for Rovers in the 81st. Conan, we're 7 games into the season. We now have a 6-point advantage on top. I know there's an awful lot of football still to be played, but that could well be one of those come-from-behind wins that we look back upon as being very, very significant come season's end.
Oh, 100%. Like, Shamrock Rovers have played this season with a bit of a swagger and a bit of aura about them, and you have to give credit, as Liam said, to Stephen Bradley. He did empty his bench and he brought on young Dean Williams, and Dean has been prolific in this new pre-season that Shamrock Rovers have played, and he's scored over five goals, I think. And coming off the bench, doesn't have many first team games at Shamrock Rovers, and he made a really big impact coming on. And that 6-point lead, you can see, I'd say the likes of Bowes and Dundalk and Pat's underneath playing second, third and fourth at the moment would be having their heads bowed at this moment in time, considering that they could have been only 3 points off Rovers. But unfortunately now it's there's a bit of a gap, and to be honest, I can't really see it them being drawn in.
Liam, what do you make of them now, having seen them in the flesh?
Well, last season for me they were the best team in the league, then, because even though Dundalk won the league football wise and playing wise, Rovers came up here last year and absolutely dominated, you know, Derry for 90 minutes, and it was the best display I'd seen from any team in the Brandywell for a long time. So it was no surprise to me the way they were going to play tonight, and I was speaking to John McDonald before, and John was saying that they're absolutely flying. So looking at them, they've so many technically good players, especially in the midfield where they dominate the ball. You know, they just switch, one player goes in, one comes out, and just it's seamless the way they play. So, you know, it was a dogged display from them tonight, because Derry come up, they do a job. You know, they try and make it difficult for them, But good teams always find a way. They won matches, and this Rovers team are, I think, of as Conan said there, I can't see anybody challenging them this season.
And Liam, what's the feeling around the town in regard to Derry? Obviously, like, terribly disappointing the restart with the 2-0 defeat to Rovers. Sligo Rovers look to have bounced back in good style against Pats last week. Is today one of those games that you just need to accept sometimes that as good a performance as you put in, it's going to take something very significant to get the 3 points?
Yeah, absolutely. I think when they restarted and you seen you had Rovers 3 games on there, I think the way Derry are trying to rebuild and the way Declan and his backroom staff are trying to rebuild, I think it was always going to be a difficult game, you know. And but I think compared to the Sligo game where everybody left the brand were totally dejected the way they played, I think more than any against Pats and this performance has given everybody a belief that there's something they build there with. So I think you take this one on the chin. You know you can compete with Rovers for long periods of the match. Ability-wise and technical-wise, you're not going to be as good as them, but as long as you put that effort in, it gives people a bit of belief that you can go on and you know, build on what you have.
So, Conan, are we now looking at second place as the new league title?
Yeah, I suppose with the shortened season, you're going to have to look like that. Like, Shamrock always still have to go up to Oriel Park, remember, and that's going to be a difficult game, but if they can even come away with a point from that, they... I just can't see them being drawn in. They've just experience all over the pitch now, considering their success in the FAI Cup last year. I did mention before, Cork City won the FAI Cup in 2017. And John Caulfield said at the time that they just got this belief about the team and they went in and dominated 2018 and won the title at a canter, really, when ultimately Sean Maguire scored all those goals for them. But I think there's more talent and quality in this Shamrock Rovers team this season. Mm-hmm. And the players that they have, like Jack Byrne, the superlatives are just keep going for him. He's absolutely terrific. But I think that the back four don't get enough credit. And Roberto Lopez made a slight mistake for the goal, some might say, but coming up with the winner in 8 minutes from time, it's fantastic for Shamrock Rovers. And I really do think that they'd be very, very hard to catch.
James, is there a weakness, or do we just simply have to look at the squad as an entity and look at the depth they have and the players that don't make the starting 11? And, you know, it's kind of mouth-watering and frightening in equal measure.
Yeah, it is. And even if you look at our bench this evening, the players they were able to take off the bench as well this evening is just absolutely crazy. So I know myself and Johnny McDonald said it on last week's podcast, I can't see anybody beating them to the end of the season. That's a massive gap they have now. I know it's 6 points over Bowes, but if you look at Bowes and Dundalk, both of them have to play Rovers, which could possibly bring back to six, take 6 points off, but I can't see it happening, to tell you the truth.
Okay.
At this early stage.
Right, there'll be no more podcasts any week from now on after this burst of positivity. We'll present save the FAI a fortune and present the league title.
We went from March to now without any football and we were able to manage it. I'm sure we can get through the next couple of weeks.
Well, let's talk about the rest of the league then. We will begin. Now, I have to say, I'm just beginning in the order of the league table. I'm not looking to, you know, start getting overly excited about the fact that Bohemians are second in the table after that very impressive 2-1 win against the champions Dundalk. I'm really giving this to Big Sell at Dalymount Park on Friday night. We're going to hear from the Bohemians manager Keith Long, who spoke after the game, not necessarily about Bo's form since the return after the shutdown or the suspension of play in the league, but certainly lessons they learned in advance of the league suspension, particularly in the game against Shelburne.
We felt that when we played Shelburne the last day, that we found a way of playing and we had a clearer understanding of what we were about as a team, because it takes time to adapt and to for things to gel as a group coming back, and obviously then we went into the enforced lockdown. So coming back, it was very important, you know, with the shortened season, that we try and make a fast start, and we're pleased to have done that. Yes, we've got some good players at the club and we're in great condition, and then that's testament to our conditioning people at the club, testament to the players and their attitude and their application. So they've run themselves into the floor here today, and you need to do that against a top side like Dundalk. These have been the best team in the country for many years now at this stage. So to beat them in the manner that we did, happy with a 2-1 result, but possibly could have won by more. And that being said, you know, Dundalk had a chance or two as well in the second half. So, but really pleased with the performance. Great to get the 3 points. And like I said, it's been a really good start for us.
Conan, when we look at this game, in what part should we be focusing on Dundalk falling off the level that they were at in recent years compared to Keith Long being able to prolong this work and this achievement that he's been able to do with a squad that on paper people might not necessarily expect what they are achieving?
I thought the fullback areas for Dundalk have been it's been their strength over the last number of years, but I thought Sean Gannon and Dane Massey, I've never seen them so outplayed in a game in the League of Ireland. I thought Chris Twerdick was a constant thorn down the left hand side. He was very direct, he was very quick, and Sean was making so many forced errors as a result of Twerdick's harassment. And similar to the other wing, Danny Grant, I do think he's a fabulous talent. I think everyone knows what I think of him. He's again similar, very quick and direct. He's strong, and he gave Dane Massey an awful time at times. But I think sometimes a lot of people might forget the job that Keith Long and Trevor Crowley are doing at Bowes. Like his tactics the other night were absolutely perfect. They counter-attacked at speed. They created plenty of chances. Like, there hasn't been a time over the last number of years that Dundalk have conceded so many chances. It could have easily been 4 or 5 for Bowles the other night. I don't think they're getting enough credit for what they've done on such a short, small budget as well. The players that they've brought in up through the ranks at Bowes as well. I do think though that the win was kind of taken away from them by one of their players in a very embarrassing tweet, being totally honest. But apart from that, they've been absolutely exceptional this season, and as a club, they're working really, really hard as well.
This is the Danny Mandrew tweet.
It is, yeah.
So just, most people will probably be aware of it at this stage because it's gone around the league so much that the Bohemians team news came out on Friday and he was listed as being a doubt because, and in brackets it said gargled. Now, Bowes have moved to clarify afterwards that there was a message sent in a WhatsApp group which obviously was sent in jest and then made it into the official team news and hadn't been caught up on. Is the player not entitled, Conan, to come out and publicly defend himself if he feels that what has gone on maybe falls below the standards that he would accept of or expect of himself and the club?
Look, I really do think that an agent has gotten into his ear here. Obviously he's an exceptional talent. He wants to get across the water, I'm sure, considering his ability. And I'm just, I that's what my guess is. I think everybody else would just laugh it off, like everybody did. It wasn't a case of malice. It was an error up by the club, and they made a fulsome apology to it. And he's talking about damaging his reputation, where I feel that he damaged his reputation earlier on in the week when he was criticising an NHS worker or a public row on Twitter over the pandemic. And I just feel that if he's talking about reputation on one sense and then doing something similar on a public platform like Twitter a couple of days previously, it just doesn't sit right, especially with the amount of work that Bohemians are doing in the community as well, Damien. It just left a sour taste. And as a player, if I was a player in that dressing room, I would have been very, very, very disappointed with a fellow player doing that after taking away from the performance and from the team, because it was huge and everybody was talking about it. And then a little over an hour later, one of their players puts out a tweet about just all about his reputation, and it just didn't sit right with me at all. And I'd be, if Shane Supple and Derek Pender were in that dressing room, I'd be surprised if that tweet went down.
Yeah, Liam, do you have a take on that? Is he entitled to go public if something has gone out in public that he's not satisfied with?
Absolutely. If it was me and it wasn't true, I would be making a comment on it. You know, so I think Twitter is a dangerous place for footballers now at the minute. You know, I think you get yourself wrapped up in too many things, and everything that's said or retweeted or tweeted is now is scrutinised, and I think players are, you know, definitely should try and stay away from it. It's probably a good place they get your point of view over, but as Conan said, sometimes you're better off saying nothing if it's not true. But if what was said about him was false, then he has every right to come out and clear it.
James, in footballing terms, back to the action itself, like Bowes obviously You know, good win away to Cork. Turner's Cross has been a problem venue for them in recent years. Great win and good performance against Dundalk. Finn Harps away from home next. You know, home against Pats before they face Rovers and Tallaght. I suppose the big question is, how much of this momentum can they carry on and prolong this stay towards the top end of the table?
I think they can. I think what Conan said earlier about Keith Long not getting the just rewards that people in the press and anywhere else haven't really given them the quality that the two of them themselves have brought into the club with very little money has been excellent. I think he's probably one of the most underrated managers in the league. And if it wasn't for the likes of Stephen Kennedy there before, I think he should have won manager the year last year, maybe because of the job he did with Bowes. I think he just put them out the way he puts them out. And if you look at players he has in his team, Keith Ward, for instance, like most clubs would have said, oh, no, I'm not going to take a gamble on Keith Ward. But Keith Ward is absolutely super under Keith Long. Like, he's been absolutely brilliant. There's a couple of balls he put in behind the Dundalk defence at the weekend that any team would have taken any player who could find a ball like that. We've seen it tonight from some of the top players at Rovers, Jack Byrne spreading balls from right to left. But that's exactly what Keith Ward does for Bowes. And they'll just keep on going the way they are, as Keith would say, one game at a time. And the momentum's with them now. And like, they're second in the league. They're going to find out who they're going to play in Europe tomorrow. It should just snowball from here, to tell you the truth, for Bohemians.
Liam, from a Dundalk perspective, how concerned would you be with the performance level and the results this season?
Well, that's the problem when you're so successful. You know, once the levels drop, anything at all that not what you're used to, then you're going to get scrutinised, and everybody will be saying, oh, they're not the team they were. But I wouldn't write them off just yet. You know, they're still the team debating this league. You know, their record has warranted that respect. And if you're going to win this league, if Shamrock Rovers are going to win this league this year, I think they're still Dundalk as a team. I don't think as much as the fellas are saying, I think Dundalk still have more quality than Bowes have. I think Bowes are very, very strong physically, and you know, Keith Long's done a brilliant job, but I think quality-wise, Dundalk will still be the team they beat this season. But performances haven't been great. You know, I watched them at the start of the season when they played Derry down at Dundalk. Derry weren't great that night, but Dundalk weren't either. But I know they're slow starters, and as the season goes on, they usually pick up a bit of momentum. But I think every great team goes through dips in form, and Dundalk at the minute, unfortunately, are going through theirs at a time when Shamrock Rovers are just coming to the fore.
Okay, we'll just fire through some of the other games. Conan, St. Pat's 2-0 winners against Finn Harps. I have to admit, it's not a game I had an opportunity to see, but listening to people chatting about it since, there seems to be a real sense around Inchicore that perhaps what Stephen O'Donnell wants to do and how he wants his team to play is finally starting to see fruition on the pitch.
Yeah, I still think it's a little bit early for that type of talk, Damien, to be totally honest. Like, Stephen O'Donnell came in with about 6 or 7 games to go towards the end of last season, and it's only 7 games into this season, really. And yes, he has made his stamp on things, and he's brought in some great signs. I think David Titov is a brilliant, is a very, very good signing. But the main man for them at the moment, will have to be the lone signing of Georgie Kelly. He's the first proper centre forward the Pats have had since Christy Fagan. Now, not saying he's anywhere near his ability just yet, but he's as close to that you could get, I suppose, within the league. He's a talisman. He'll score goals, and I think he's proved that over the last couple of years with Dundalk coming off the bench and the amount of goals that he has scored. So he's going to be a big player for them. If they didn't have somebody like Georgie Kelly at the club, I think they would struggle. They haven't really scored many goals over the last before the lockdown in the opening few games. They brought in players over the last couple of years, not Stevie O'Donnell signings, the likes of Mikey Drennan, that haven't worked. He brought in Martin Rennie at the start of the season, and big things were expected of him, and that hasn't worked out just yet. I'm not writing him off yet now, but with Georgie Kelly coming in, I don't know whether his game time is going to be much. But he has signed well, and that's what I would say. The likes of Dan Ward, as it came in, he was very, very good. He was excellent. But there's the defensive midfielder in Jamie Lennon, Damien. I think he's going to be key. I think he's an under-21 international, still very, very, very young for that position, and he's played the last couple of games, and he's been superb in both. So they have a big game now coming up in the FAI Cup against Finn Harps, actually. But I do think it's on the opposite way with Finn Harps. I think it's ominous for them. They used to be real dogged and love the fight, and I just haven't seen it from them this season, which has been very, very disappointing.
Yeah, I'll get Liam's view on them in a moment, because it's five defeats on a bounce now. But James, just on Pats, I suppose the big thing that a lot of people around Inchicore want to see is just some level of consistency in terms of results, because that's really been their downfall in recent seasons.
Yeah, St. Pat's have been the only team to be consistently inconsistent for the last two seasons. Like, even if you look at this restart here, you've got a good point against Dundalk where you've shown great passion, you've got to show great fitness to continue and play on and get a goal back as quick as you did. But then you've got a loss against Derry at home, where they weren't at the races, to tell you the truth. Derry did very, very well against them. And then a win against Finn Harps, which they were actually expected to do. Do you know what I mean? Finn Harps wouldn't be the hardest team. Like, in fairness, they did draw with them last year, I think, in Richmond Park as well. But like Georgie Kelly adding, as Conan said, two goals to that. Georgie, I know Declan Devine would have been over the moon if he was able to get Georgie back to Derry. But such is life in football, that wasn't going to happen. But yeah, they need to get a lot more consistent. Now, they are only 3 points off Dundalk. Can they push to keep that European place? Because between fourth and seventh at this moment in time might get that fourth place, in which the way the FA Cup's gone the last number of years, that's a European place for you. But they need to, as Conan said, Stevie's come in, he's signed a couple of players, but they're still very inconsistent.
Mm. Just, Liam, back to the Northwest and with regard to Finn Harps, you know, an opening night win followed by a draw, five losses on the bounce since then. The fact that Cork City are so off the pace this year might help Finn Harps in the long run, but you know, do you have to really worry about where Harps are going, or is it a case that of all the teams at that end of the table, they're the ones with the experience of the dogfight which might see them over the line in the end?
Well, they always seem to have that. I mean, you know what I mean, they always seem to, well, the last couple of years they've escaped it, you know. Their ambition seems to be funny second from bottom and probably get the playoff, you know. And unfortunately, the thing about Harps this season, he's brought a lot of players in, and they're probably trying to push on and maybe get on the, you know, on the mid-table, and hopefully they would be secure by come the end of the season. But it's been a slow decline, to be quite honest. You know, they haven't really pushed on, especially since the night here at the Brando, where they were very unfortunate not to take all points here. And since then, you know, they haven't, since we've come back again, it's just been, they just haven't been at it. And chatting to Eric, he was at the game on Tuesday night, and he said that they were so poor. So you don't want to be, your performance levels at this stage of the season now, you don't want to be hitting a brick wall. You want to be, especially a team that's always struggling down there, you don't want to be losing too many matches. As you say, Cork might be their saving grace this season, but for Paul Hegarty and Ollie Horgan, It's worrying times. Mm.
But James, just a word on Sligo Rovers. You know, and we can see it in every league across Europe. There was one team that completely defied expectations once the restart happened, and it looks like that could well be Liam Buckley and Sligo Rovers. And again, I've a mild vested interest insofar as my in-laws are all Sligo Rovers nuts, that the sense of positivity around the town has been bolstered so much by the efforts of the supporters during the lockdown to raise funds and be so visible, that they're a team that started in many ways must have almost felt like league champions, the level of support they had during the lockdown.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. We mentioned this year on year, the amount of finances and fundraising that the local community in Sligo do for the club is ridiculous. Any club in Ireland would love it. Any club across Europe would love that kind of funds coming in from their local community. But they've started at a pace. Like the win in Derry, Ronan Coughlin in particular, I think is a new man. He's playing really, really well. He's harassing all the defence. They got a great start the other night. 30 seconds in, they're 1-0 up. And from that moment on, you're thinking, this is only going to go one way. They double the lead. And I know Gary Deegan gets an absolutely smashing goal at the death, but it never looked like Sligo were going to lose that game. And between De Vries and Coughlin, and then the back four as well, seemed very, very solid compared to where they were. Them two wins have got them their points. I can't see them being in trouble now, I have to say, for the rest of the season.
And just, Conan, a word on Shells. Ian Morris afterwards tearing his hair out at the fact that you do so much work over the course of the week, and 30 seconds in, it's undone when you give your opponents an early lead.
Exactly. And he'd be even pulling his hair out even more, because any time they go behind, they've got 0 points when conceding first. So their form in coming from behind and getting even a draw is terrible. They need, I think, they went up to the Bally Buffet and earlier on in the week, and they picked up a great result, and then only a couple of days later they had to travel down to the showgrounds. And I think that the trip might have taken its toll, being totally honest, on the team, but take nothing away from Sligo Rovers' performance. I thought they were absolutely excellent, and that front three with Junior to come in is a European challenging to attacking line.
Nuts.
And I don't think we'll be talking about Sligo Rovers down at the bottom come the end of the season.
Okay, I want to move on then and talk about the other game of the weekend. Waterford and Cork City playing out a draw in the Munster Derby. Now this, like, again, somewhat tepid affair. Waterford probably should have won it at the end, certainly should have had a penalty you know, midway through the game as well. An awful lot of talking points around the club this week with regard to the two players who reported COVID-like symptoms. Obviously, we are very glad to hear that in both cases, both players have tested negative for COVID-19. Obviously led to the departure of the club doctor, Sinead Fitzpatrick, during the week. A lot of questions, certainly. I was down to cover the game. I felt it would have been an opportunity for John Sheridan and the club to have maybe answered a couple of questions that have been raised over the course of the week, particularly when you see a very well-respected doctor taking to Facebook to say resigning when you feel things are very wrong is sometimes the right thing to do, which she said in her personal Facebook page. John Sheridan, as is completely his right, declined the opportunity to do post-match media. First team coach Fran Rocket was put out instead.
We're disappointed in there. There's, you know, I think we've standards, and you know, it was just the way it went. You know, the penalty looked like a stonewall penalty. After that, then you look at the chances that we had. I think it was two or three that came across the 6-yard box. So we need to finish those more clinical. Maybe with a few weeks' work, I don't know, we probably would have done. But look, we're disappointed. You know, Munster Derby, and it was an ideal opportunity to kick on. You know,
yeah, particularly I would imagine there must have been a great buzz around the place last week, having come back from the win against Shelburne. That it would have been the ideal situation to build on that.
Exactly. Look, it was unbelievable last week, because you know yourself, you're out for so long, you need 3 points, get 3 points in your first game, especially away from home. It's ideal. But to do it the way we've done it as well, we were resolute. We looked like we can, when we attack, we looked like we are threatening. But you know, it was a great chance to build on it this week. But look, we're not going to be too disheartened. It's just disappointment because of the standards we set ourselves, you know. Just
overall, obviously a difficult week, I'd imagine. Public health and the health and safety of everyone involved here is paramount. How disruptive was it to preparations? Because presumably there would have been a fair bit of recovery required anyway from the Shelburne game last weekend.
Well, we got enough recovery with the way things worked out, but you want to keep these boys, you know, in shape as well. We've been off long enough with the lockdown, so to go, it upset everything, because you've a rhythm after a win. You want to try and keep that whole cohesion, and you're hoping that, you know, that you can build on it and keep that camaraderie going. But then there's that separation then when the players aren't with you in the dressing room, so it's kind of a thing there. We had to give them their own programs to do it and make sure that there was social distancing when they were doing all that kind of protocol. But it was disappointed, but it's still not an excuse. I still think, you look at the game today, we chances to win it. Simple as that. We chances to win the game.
How difficult a week has it been? Because the scrutiny has to have been intense.
Yeah, it was. And do you know what? We all even had to look at our own families, you know what I mean, and make sure that they, you know, everyone's moving to more or less restricted, because there's so many grey areas in this as well. As much as people think they know about it, you know what I mean, it's near enough impossible. Every step you make is, you know, it could be crucial, you know, in terms of waiting for results, etc. And that. But look, it's not easy. It's not easy for the normal man on the street either. But this week alone, it was just abnormal. I think we're all living in mad times at the minute, but this week especially, trying to prepare for a game, it's not ideal, but still not an excuse for us.
Just and it is something we would have liked to have asked John about, but you've been good enough to give us your time. Dr. Fitzpatrick, are you aware of issues that she raised with the club? Because obviously her Facebook post during the week alluded to not being satisfied with some aspects of something going on around the club. I'm entitled to ask.
I wouldn't be privy to that, to be fair. I wouldn't. I'd love to give you an answer. I wouldn't be privy to. I'm not even on Facebook. It's only hearsay. Okay. It's only hearsay from my point of view, to be honest with you.
Just, obviously, the scrutiny has been quite high. Your doctor has departed during the week. I know that's something you're not in a position to comment on. Can I just ask, so many rumours and innuendos. Is everyone involved with the playing squad and the management squad based full-time in Waterford? There's been some suggestions in some quarters that maybe some people are commuting from abroad.
I haven't a clue, because all I do is take training sessions with the lads. So all I do is I see the players on a daily basis. They're here on a daily basis. So I'm not here, there and everywhere to see their with their movements and stuff like that. So to give you a basic answer, they're here for training. That's all I'm privy to be fair.
It is paramount, as such an entity that represents what it represents in this part of the country, that the club and people that are heroes to people would be seen to be living in line with HSE guidelines and public health advice.
100%, and I'm sure Waterford are carrying it out that way. 100%, I'd agree with you.
That's Fran Rockett, who went out to do media afterwards. Won't get into that too much, lads. We did send a list of questions to the club afterwards, and details of those are available on the RTE website. When in particular asked if they were aware of issues that were raised by any medical professions, they said they'd received no official complaints. And when we sought further clarification, we asked if any issues were raised in a form that wouldn't constitute official or formal complaints. The club replied, saying that they felt their original answer had clarified the issue. Just in regard to the game itself, James, not the greatest of spectacles. A kind of a sense that, you know, you can see how John Sheridan wants this Waterford team to play, and they'll probably be a little bit disappointed over the course of the 90 minutes not to have got the result.
Yeah, they had several good chances during the game, and they did, as Fran mentioned there. I watched back on it today, an absolutely stonewall penalty they had as well that was turned down, where the Cork player, Basie Axe's goalkeeper, saves the ball with his hands, drags it under his body, and then hands it to McNulty. The referee doesn't see it. So things like that are unfortunate. As I said, you mentioned as well, up and down week for them. I would suggest that a point would be, they would have been happy with that result considering the week they had.
Conan?
Yeah, I thought Waterford played the long diagonal ball a little bit too much in the first half, and it just wasn't working for them. As James said, I just don't know how the Adriano Real didn't give that penalty for Waterford. It was a definite handball by Kevin O'Connor. When they brought Will Fitzgerald on, though, Damien, I thought it kind of gave them a little bit of impetus in the second half, and he really changed the game, and he really should have won it in injury time as well. And funnily enough, again, Kevin O'Connor cleared it off the line. But yeah, I talk in relation to Cork, though, they were still trying to play out from the back. We know Neil Fenn, he loves that. That's his style of play, and I really respect that about him. But I'm not sure if they have the quality of player to make that a success. Like, they were caught out regularly, especially in the first half. But they do have technically gifted players. Corey Galvin impressed. I thought he was very good, and he was very direct. And I do think they're missing that centre forward just to finish off some of the chances that he will create.
Yeah, Liam, just a word on Cork City. Like Neil Fenn after the game talking about the difficulty that they've only had one goal in the seven games so far this season. Like, defensively, they really set out to frustrate Waterford at the weekend, but he has a couple of players in quarantine that he's hoping to bring in as striking options. But he's going to have to try and turn things around very, very quickly, because can the Premier Division afford not to have a club like Cork in it?
Well, it just shows you how quickly, if you don't manage your club properly, you know, how quickly you can fall into the trap and find yourself fighting relegation. That's a couple of seasons now they found it. But the teams down around the bottom are all having the same problems. As Conan said, centre forwards are really hard to come by at the minute, where somebody like, you know, as Conan said, like a Christy Fagan, get you 10, 15 goals a season. Like, there's nobody like that anymore. You know, Pat Hoobin, Derry are struggling. Derry have struggled since David Parkhouse went last year. All the teams down around there, Cork, Derry, now the man at Fun Harps, you know, you look at their goal tally, you know, it's a meagre return, you know, for clubs like Derry and Cork to be in that position. It says a lot, you know, for the way that they're really struggling. They bring in the correct type of players. They play the way they want to play.
Okay, Liam, I'm going to let you go. Thanks so much for being with us.
All right, Damon. All right, Colin, all the best. See you.
Take care, Liam.
Liam Coyle has been joining us there from the Brandy Well. Gentlemen, if we have a quick look at the First Division, Cabinteely had obviously set the world on fire. A draw away to Wexford, not the worst of results. A 3-point advantage for them now at the top of the table. And like James, as with so many seasons in the past, this is the league that is so, so difficult to get out of, such is the closeness at the top of the table.
Yeah, and to tell you what, Cabinteely got off to an absolute flyer. In fairness, they won 4, drawn 1, 13 points ahead of Drogheda. People would have probably thought that Bray, UCD, Drogheda would have been competing with Longford, maybe Cabinteely drift off late in the season, as they've done over the last number of years. But in fairness to them, they've kept it going since the break at nil-all draw the other night. Probably not the best result, but still keeps them ahead of them. And just going back to what you said there about Cork City, not maybe the league needs that. Like, just because you're a name in history doesn't mean you don't get relegated. And if any of the teams find it, and you look at the likes of Bray, you look at UCD are up and down, Galway United, for instance, teams that have been in the Premier Division, once you end up in that first division, it's not the easiest thing to get out of.
Yeah, Conan, you go on with that?
Yeah, I do. I do think Cabin Teely, though, a lot of people are underestimating them, I think. Like, they've been up in the first division, the higher positions the last couple of seasons, and I think why not Cabin Teely to make a run for it this year? They got to the playoffs last year. Drogheda bet them and comfortably bet them in the playoffs, but they lost Rob Manley to Longford, so that was a big loss to them. But Shane Barnes has stepped up now. It's 4 goals this season for him in 5 games, and I don't think that's a bad result on Friday night, by the way, because the job Brian O'Sullivan is doing down in Wexford is nothing short of extraordinary. Brought in some fantastic new signings, brought back Jack Doherty as well. Their main man down there now, he'll be a big asset to Wexford going forward. But yeah, I think it's playing out nearly as I thought. Apart from Wexford, I think Wexford are doing particularly well, even though they're mid table. But a lot of people would have put them down towards the bottom. Drogheda had an excellent win over Bray last week. Bray bet Longford. Longford then beat Athlone. So it's everyone beats everyone.
It's impossible to call it, isn't it?
It is. It always is impossible. But I was just going to say there, somebody should sign me for the first division, because I've won it 3 times in the last 4 times I've played it, Damien. You know,
well, so. There you go. And he is available on social media for all offers. And,
absolutely
go
not.
To LinkedIn, I'm contacted by Glenn Avon,
Damien, and I'm all, I can't wait.
Yeah, and are you match fit?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. We're back training next Saturday night. Really okay. Looking forward to pre-season and all and getting back on the
way. Would you stop? No one looks forward to pre-season.
Yeah, but when you're fit like me, Damien,
there you go. Yeah,
looking at all those young lads sweating and all, I'd be not a bother on me.
We are going to
taking up walking late recently, Damien.
Oh, sure, come
that?
Here. I was going to say a man who's had more clubs than Tiger Woods. I thought you looked really well in the Bowes jersey down the laneway in Phibsborough. It was, you know the things you do for charity.
I should be the new model of Bowes. Get rid of Cornwall.
Yeah, they're definitely putting him in kids' jerseys as well. Like, there's no way a man can fit in a jersey
under
that tight.
Sevens jerseys.
You know, Adrian Eames is going to listen to this thinking, geez, we're talking about fashion on the podcast now. Anyway, I'm going to switch attention completely, and I'm going to move to the Women's National League, which got underway this weekend. Piemont, top of the pile after the opening weekend. 5-0 winners over Treaty United. We'll chat about this with the lads in just a second, but let's get some reaction to the weekend from Eleanor Ryan Doyle, who was on target for Piemont in that win. Eleanor, I suppose a lot was made over the last couple of weeks about the fact that it was so uncertain as to whether or not the league would happen, and I know there's been great enthusiasm around the place as well, so a great joy to get the win, but perhaps a lot of relief as well to be up and running.
I think so. I think obviously there's always going to be a bit of pressure on the league champions to go and succeed again in the league, and obviously in a cup and stuff, but I think we did well. Like, obviously we could have taken more chances and scored a few more goals, but I think overall it's important to just get the 3 points on the board and kind of continue on to the next match.
And it had the potential to be one of those tricky games, because Mary Curtin was on Morning Ireland with me on Friday morning looking ahead to the season, and you faced a squad that are new to the league for the most part but are very, very intent on making an impact for the area of Limerick this year.
100%. They're a young enough team now, I must say, and I think the fighting them was very, like, they were very good yesterday, I must give them credit. They put a huge battle up to us, and I think they should be proud of their performance yesterday, and I think they're going to be ones to watch in the league and kind of might get a few results against a few teams.
Is that a massive benefit to the league this year, that we do have these new teams now coming in, that not only is there a bit of a geographical spread in terms of where women's football has been brought to at the highest level in the country, but just simply the more teams you play on a less frequent basis, the more it will benefit the game across the country?
Yeah, I think it's a bit better, because like, you're not like, you don't know what to expect sometimes with teams, like when you're not used to them, so they're a new team, and I think like the Treaty and Bowes and Athlone, you're not going to know what to expect when you play them, unless you're like watching their matches from previous weeks. But I think it's great to have a team down Limerick area for the girls to get an opportunity to play at a high level, and I think it's going to be good for them, and I think it's great to have them in the league this year.
But it is a massive benefit, isn't it, to see that clubs are starting to invest in women's football. And it's like, you look across the league, great players, great coaching staffs, that it doesn't appear to be a case that people are just paying it lip service, that it has now become such a priority for so many clubs.
I think so. I think it's like getting the whole way up. Like, I know a few teams don't have a basis on like underage, but if they have their senior team there, I think it's something to work from and get a kind of the generation going up. And I know Treaty have an under 17 team, so I think that's a stepping stone for them as well. So it's good to see like the likes of them teams coming into the league and kind of having a chance instead of like traveling so many hours to play for a club the other side of the country. And it's good for the players down there getting a chance to play.
Yeah, and it's important as well to harness the sense of positivity. I have an 8-year-old who was a mascot, you know, out in Talla a couple of months back. And, you know, to be at those games and to be in a situation where people are complaining that they can't get tickets to an international, it just goes to show you the benefit that is being seen and the hunger that's there to support women's football in the country.
100%. Like, the children come up to our matches and stuff, and They're loving being there and seeing a few like international players, and even people who aren't playing international, they're loving it. Like, I think it's an opportunity to see that there is a future in women's football in Ireland, and to see that it can be grown and kind of go into more professional sense. But I think we still have to kind of invest more money and stuff into it. But I think it's really looking good for the future of women's football in Ireland.
Obviously, it's a truncated season, so does that make it even more important just to get up and running and to try and get as many points in the bag as quickly as you can?
Yeah, exactly. I was saying in another interview, I was saying every match we're going to have to take as a cup final, because you might not get the chance again to play them. And so I think you need to get all the points, as many points as you can, from the very start.
And we looked at it last year in terms of the conclusion to a league. You couldn't have asked for much more. When, you know, people talk about the Premier League and La Liga and everything else, and the leagues are wrapped up weeks to go. Obviously, Shell's pushed Piemont the whole way last season. It seems to be widely considered it'll be far more than a two-horse race this year.
100%. I think there's a few mad results yesterday, Galway and Dealor drawing, and so I think it's going to be very competitive this year. I think everyone's up for the challenge of going for the league this year. And I think it's going to be maybe a 4 or 5 team race for the league this year. And I think that makes it better. It makes it more competitive for everyone.
Yeah, just from your own perspectives, I presume, you know, like all high-achieving teams, when you gather for the start of the league, you don't talk an awful lot about what was achieved last year. It's a blank piece of paper, and it's looking to improve upon what's gone before.
Exactly. I think you have to kind of look to the future. You can't really look in the past, because there's nothing you can do about that. You can only do better in the future. And I know we've stuff to look forward to, going for the league again and obviously going for Champions League. But I think we have to kind of look forward instead of looking backwards.
Just in terms of the Champions League, like, we hope we're in a situation where all these games can go ahead, and, you know, it's such a great opportunity, isn't it, to test yourselves against, you know, the best teams from around the continent.
Yeah, I think it's, to be honest, we don't even know if it's going to go ahead in October, but I think it's down to like the health and safety and stuff, and I think that's a priority, that none of the girls are going to be getting sick when we go travelling over to play in the Champions League. But at the same time, it's a great opportunity if we do go. It's exciting for us, because not many of the players have played in Champions League, so it's something new, and playing against the best in the world, or not the world, in Europe. So I think it's an exciting time for us.
How important was it that the league went ahead this year? Because so much focus was on the men's league and whether or not that would happen, and under what circumstances it would happen, that the Women's National League, in a way, wasn't even secondary in the conversation. It didn't seem to be part of the conversation at all for quite some time. And it would have probably done very, very significant damage had we not had some form of a season this year.
I think so. And I think in people's mental health as well, I think it would have kind of gone down like really badly if the women didn't happen. Like, the girls are like playing football because they love it and kind of love that. But I know there was nothing mention about the women's, all about the men's as usual, but like, I think it's important that it went ahead, and I think for people looking forward to going to the match and stuff, I think it's great that it went ahead, and kind of exciting that the league can, it's up and running now.
Mm. Just from your own point of view, is that something that you're very conscious of yourself, that the importance of being able to get back into a team setting where so many of us spent so many weeks and months at home looking at the four walls, looking at the same people day in, day out?
I think so. One of my friends would be football friends as well. So, the girls on my team would be my friends as well outside or whatever. And I think it was important that getting back into the team setting where you spend so many, you spend 3-4 days a week with the girls and you're so close as a group. I think it was really important that we kind of got back and playing, but at the same time I had to be in a safe way. But thankfully we're all well and good, so we're lucky that we're back now and playing.
How do you balance the week in terms of the profession, presumably, and trying to keep at the top end of football?
Well, it's tough enough. I'm working full time now at the moment, and I think it's trying to get the balance of what to eat during the day and what training I can do and kind of going into lessons. But I'm doing well so far. Kind of have to keep going with the season, traveling and down the country and stuff. I think you kind of have to get that balance and knowing what to do and when to do it.
But the problem, presumably, that we all have at the moment is, particularly if you're working from home, I don't know about you, you're probably far more well-behaved than I am, but particularly the diet and sticking your head into the press to get a packet of biscuits here in, here out, is it far more difficult in the current climate than it might have been if you were in a regular, I presume, are you working from home or are you back
No, I'm working in an office.
Yeah. So you're fine, yeah. You're back into your routine completely.
Yeah, I'm lucky enough to be back in the office and stuff, but at the same time, if I want something, I might go to the vending machine, but I've kind of stopped myself, told everyone to tell me no, not to go to the vending machine. But I think it's hard to kind of balance that if you're working from home, because you kind of get lazy and sluggish. But when you have a routine of getting up in the morning and going to your workplace, I think that kind of helps a little bit more. And it's a bit easier for me.
And just to finish before we let you go, just looking at the fixtures, obviously you've got your away to Cork next week, then a quick turnaround into DLR Waves for a midweek game, and then away to Bowes the following weekend. It's thick and fast, it's fairly relentless.
Yeah, exactly. We've a few tough matches now, there's them few teams, Cork away is always a tough one going down there and kind of playing their turf. I think it's going to be a tough one for us on Sunday. But hopefully we can do the job and get a few more points, and then going into Wednesday against DLR, I think that'll be another tough one. But hopefully everyone stays fit and focused for the whole season and even the first few matches.
Eleanor, wish you well for the year ahead. And I think, I've alluded to it, I've a football mad 8-year-old at home, so I'm hoping the season goes well. And anything that gets, heroes out there for the kids to see, and a pathway that, girls can know that they can play top level football in their own country, is certainly to be encouraged. Eleanor Ryan Doyle of Piemont United, thanks so much for being with us on the RTE Soccer Podcast.
Thanks very much.
So that's Eleanor Ryan Doyle from Piemont there, chatting to us. Conan, I suppose the place to start with a lot of this is, we look at it in terms of what we ask for from leagues, as said to Eleanor there, Shell's pushing Piemont all the way last year. It's great to see the league get the coverage it gets, and it deserves far more than it is even getting this week.
I think the coverage this week, Damien, has been nothing short of incredible. It's been all over my timeline on Twitter. It's been on every social media sports app in the country. Learning new things myself about the Women's National League that I didn't know. And I think it's absolutely fantastic for the game here. And I have two young daughters as well. So I'll definitely, when things are back up and running, they play for the local team where I am. But I'm definitely making a journey into one of these games with them. But Piemont started off the season very, very well. I think that they're going to be the team to beat. I think Shelburne will be pushing them, but I thought they were a bit sluggish the other day against Cork as well, but by all accounts. But James O'Callaghan will be delighted with the start Piemont made. Anya O'Gorman as well, the legend that is, and two goals, and Stephanie Roach back from a 6-year absence from the league. So I think everything is working in Piemont's favour, and a nice little start to the season as well.
And James, maybe more so than the men's league and the fact that it's a shame we can't go and enjoy matches, it's a terrible shame with the motivation that people have to watch women's football that we've seen with the international side in Tala. One would imagine, particularly the way certain clubs go about marketing themselves, that there would be quite a healthy crowd for women's football at these matches if we could allow people in.
Yeah, we can. We actually, some of the teams, if you look at over the weekend, Wexford Utes, for instance, they did allow people in. I think they had 60 tickets they were allowed to sell out of the 200 that the HSE say you're allowed at the match. They did their maths beforehand, as much as how many people would be there for Bohemians on official levels, how many would be there from the Utes. And they put 50 tickets, I think it was, up for sale. So they are looking at ways to allow people in up to this 200 point. And I think that's going to be a good way of getting people in to the ground and keeping the actual momentum going. As you said, the press this week has been absolutely fantastic. Going into the league, it was their first game started. We spoke to Anya a little while ago. She was over the moon to get back training. As you said, Steph Roach comes in, first game in 6 years, having been away in the States and elsewhere, and scores for Piemont as well. So the big names are back as well. And then you've obviously got two new clubs starting this year as well, with Bohemians and Treaty United taking to the fields for the first time at the weekend. As
yeah,
well.
And
so
at Lone Town to come as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You've got loads of good things. Like, for instance, it's ironic that this actually happens. It's one of the first teams to take to the pitch for their first ever game, obviously Bohemians in the league, playing Wexford. And if we just talk back to the first division, Cabinteely's first game in the League of Ireland first division was against Wexford as well. And Chloe Darby will now go down in history as the first player for Bohemians to score in the Women's National League, which she can take a pat on the back for that one.
Mm, yeah, and long may it continue and long may it go on. Lads, just to talk about one or two other issues of the week before we wrap up. Obviously, the FAI special council meeting, which was held at the Red Cow Hotel earlier in the week. Like, to be honest with you, I'm not overly qualified to get overly stuck into memorandums of understanding and board structures and everything like that. But what resides at the heart of all of this for me, Conan, is that, you know, something has to change, some agreement has to be reached, otherwise we're just going to go into another cycle of the game being in disarray, the governing body being in somewhat of disarray potentially, that it's time for a lot of people, you would think, to make an awful lot of difficult decisions for the benefit of the game on both sides of this argument.
Absolutely. Like, I'd be like yourself. I certainly wouldn't like to waffle on about what should be done and what shouldn't be done, as I wouldn't be qualified for that. I think you'd need a master's in politics to get involved. But I think Roy Barrett steadied the ship on Friday. At the end of the day, without these new reforms, football in this country is more or less dead, you know. So the sticking point was the six elected football directors and six independent directors. And it just seems a lot of people want to see this table going forward. Already the eight football one, so as a lot of people have said this weekend, eight doesn't go into six. So but do you know who I really feel sorry for is the people working for the FAI, Damien? People working in grassroots, the regional development officers, people working in international setups and underage setups. That's who I feel sorry for, and all, because their names are getting dragged through the muck, and it's not fair on them. They've worked so hard over the last decade in their lines of work. And I think that their name and reputation have been tarnished by people that have that haven't helped them out.
Mm.
And I think the bailout will be approved. And we start moving forward in a constructive and positive way.
Yeah, and James, the other aspect of all of this is, and there is so much at stake, and you know, like, none of us want to see the ultimate doomsday scenario play out. But in a way as well, I was on Morning Ireland Sport on Friday morning, and I had Mary Curtin on talking about Treaty United. We were looking ahead to the start of the Women's National League. We were talking about how competitive the Premier Division of the SSE or Tristy League is. And the backdrop against all of this is another row. And, you know, something has to change.
Yeah, like, when it comes to the weekend, I felt like we were in the middle of one of those Steelers Wheels songs again, where I was stuck in the middle with these two different parties making clowns of each other. Like, the amount of press releases that came out over the last couple of days, especially late night ones, somebody needed to get a grip, as Conan said. It seemed to come to press conference on Saturday afternoon. Was it Saturday afternoon, maybe? Or Friday afternoon. It seemed to have been got a grip of then. But for the sake of football, as Conan said, the people below them are always the one that's hurt more than the people sitting at the table. Because they're the people who are doing a job and don't know whether they're going to have a job if this doesn't go through. The guys at the top part of the table, like, they're not full-time members. They're not full. They're like, they have other jobs, whereas people below them have jobs, and that's why SIP2 got involved last week as well. And for the sake of everybody, they just need to come together, agree what's happening, move on. Even if you have to just call it clean, let's move on from here. In the best of disasters is the best place to start afresh.
Okay.
And that's what we need to do now.
Now, let's talk then about positivity. Obviously, we've heard the Piemont waiting for their Champions League opponents to be drawn. Dundalk got news earlier today that, well, they're not going to be off to Slovenia because it's not on the government's green list of late. Instead of that, they're going to be on their way to Hungary to face the Slovenian side. Selja, with apologies to Slovenian people listening in. To be honest with you, Conan, I know virtually nothing about the potential opponents, but I really don't know, how do we assess this? Like, it's great that Dundalk are there, but Vinnie Perth will perhaps have wanted a team maybe that they could do a bit more scouting on in a short period of time, or perhaps a team that they know that they'd have the upper hand on.
It's probably the hardest draw they could have got, being totally honest, Damien. Like the Slovenian champions, is that's home to the likes of Maribor, who have competed in Champions League regularly over the last number of seasons. And like with Celje, they finished fifth three seasons in a row before they ultimately won the league last year, and they have a couple of good players in their side, and none more so than Croatian Dario Vizinar, who was only 22 years of age but scored 23 goals last year in that division, and he ultimately, his goals led them to victory. They scored the most and conceded the least. So they're a very, very good side, a top side, and Dundalk will have to be at the really top of their game to get through this. The fact that it's on neutral ground, I don't know if that's going to be a help. Perhaps it might be, but I do think that they'll be certainly up against it come the game.
Yeah, and James, like, you know, I've seen people on Twitter talking about, oh, sure, you know, it's great, it's a neutral venue for both sides and whatever else. I don't really know, is there a benefit at all in the fact that the game has moved to Hungary rather than being played at the home ground of either team?
Not really, considering there's going to be no crowd there at either ground, so it doesn't really matter as far as that's concerned. I do pity Shane Keegan at the moment, because he's the one that slotted in instead of Rory Higgins at Dundalk as the away team analyst. But they'll be definitely talking to Nathan Adua, who spent time in the Slovenia Premier Liga, playing for Ljubljana between 17 and 18. So he'd be the one to be talking to more than anybody else. But yeah, Shane Keegan and the rest of them have a lot of jobs to do over the next little while before that game takes place. Neutral venue, does it suit anybody? Not particularly, to tell you the truth. It depends on what type of pitch it's on. If it's a fake pitch like they have in Dundalk, maybe Dundalk will go slight favourites into it.
Okay, we'll see how that plays out. Plenty to chat about in the coming weeks. Conan, thank you very much for your time as always.
No problem at all, Damien.
James,
take care of yourself.
And you, James, thank you for letting me invade your party, as you tend to do every so often when Adrian steps away.
It seems much more professional, actually, when you're here.
Well,
don't
now,
say
to
that
be,
to Adrian.
To be fair, to be fair now, lads, credit where credit is due. I am merely the waiter. He has been the chef and has put the entire programme together on my behalf. So I just had to pass the ball around a little bit. Adrian will be back next week. Thanks for your time, gents. Thank you very much to you at home for listening. Until we chat again, it's been a pleasure.